So damn good. So smooth. I love smooth. I love when people put that jazzy tinging stuff in the blues, man. It's so good. All right, let's get right into it. What do you say? We're going to hear some stuff from Peach, and then we're going to get right into our interview with her, okay? Check it out. Guitar Radio Show, guitarradioshow.com. All right, folks, our next guest, many folks would consider her the real thing in blues. We have with us Peach. Hey, Peach, how are you?
Hey. Hey, how are you doing?
How's it going?
Oh, it's going great today.
Yeah. How's it in California today?
It's completely beautiful. It's one of those picture postcard days.
A California day.
Yeah, it really is.
That's beautiful. Folks, you can go to...
Of course.
Go ahead.
I don't spend a lot of time here, you know, so...
Well, you're on the road a lot.
I am on the road quite a lot these days, and mostly in Europe.
Yeah. Which I want to get into with you about that for sure.
Okay.
Folks, you can go to peachmusic.com. That's peachmusic.com, and check out the website. There's a lot going on. You can check out some vids. You can check out some sounds. Read the bio. There's some articles. A lot of good stuff there. And I can't wait to talk to you about your guitars, too. So that's going to be interesting.
Yes, I'm a guitar-playing type of person.
Yes, yes, you are.
I am so into guitars.
So how did somebody from Anderson, Indiana, how did that happen? How did you get into blues and jazz, and how did that happen?
Well, when I was 11 years old, true story, I got a wild hair to play an electric... I started out on a Fender Jazzmaster, and it was white. And I wish I still had it, you know. But my mom was just the coolest person on the planet, and she played boogie-woogie piano in the garage. But,
oh, wow.
You know, never professionally. And so... I was a really good student, so they said, okay, we'll let you get a guitar, you know. So we went down and got me a Fender Jazzmaster, and man, I was just off, you know, and a little Fender amp. I mean, how crazy is that?
That's amazing.
And I don't know what got me the bug, but I always wanted to play electrically. You know, I never really... I mean, later I did, of course, amass a collection of acoustic guitars, but I never really was into the acoustic. I always liked the electric sound, you know, at a real young age. But I don't know why.
So you can't, cite anybody? There's nobody you can really cite that was like, that did it?
Not back then, no, No, that was quite a long time ago.
So really, it was just the actual sound of the instrument that did it for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew some guys in a band in my hometown.
Mm-hmm.
And they all had electric guitars.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, I just thought that's... I just wanted that sound. I really did, you know. And I've always wanted... I've always been going for the tone, although I just feel like only recently I've been able to get any kind of tone at all. It's taken, you know, decades, but, you know, I got sidetracked a lot because I sing and, I spent a lot of time doing that, but the guitar was always a real passion of mine, you know. But it was all about the tone, so I was always chasing that.
Well,
I mean, I think guitar players chase that more than we've ever chased any kinds of anything else, you know, drugs, alcohol, or women, or men, or whatever one's chasing. But I know I've got it bad for guitars.
Well,
that much I know.
I would have to agree with you for sure that is true. Chasing tone is always the thing. It's always, well, you know, I'm almost there. It could be that much better. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, Recently, I found a piece of gear that changed everything for me. It's always been mostly humbucker guitars, you know, like Gibsons and stuff like that. But in the last 10 years, I've really become a Fender junkie, and just that woody tone and through a really good amp and an ODR, and a Nobles ODR. And I'm good. But it's amazing how it, and as you evolve, as your palate evolves too, I think that changes too, don't you?
Yeah. And then I went through a period, probably even 20 years ago, where I got into pedals and I went nuts with that, you know. And I had like pedal boards that I couldn't even manage to get in my vehicles. But I just got rid of all the pedals, and now I just play with one pedal, a Centaur boost pedal, that I've had for probably 20 years. It's a lot, especially if you're just going to go out and sit in with some friends or something. You know, I just take the tuner pedal and the Centaur pedal, and I'm good.
And then I added,
I also play a little bit of slide, so I have a slide guitar. So then I need an AB switch box. So then I've got, three pedals, but that's it. That's it. That's as far as I'm going with it.
Till you think of something else. So was that Jazzmaster the ticket out of Indiana?
Out of Indiana? Well, I left there and moved west. I went to Colorado, and I never went back. I just sort of, I kept moving west. Then after college, and during college, I went to music school for a couple of years, which was, a pretty horrible experience, because back in those years, guitar wasn't like a recognized instrument yet. I mean, it was sort of starting to come up back at the Berklee School of Music back east. But at a regular music school, it was sort of like we were the poor relations. So there was all these requirements for playing piano, which, of course, I had no skills in that department, because I'd always played guitar. So music school was fairly miserable. And then a girlfriend of mine was living in San Francisco, and she called and she goes, "Hey, one of my roommates moved out. Do you want to move in?" And I said, "I'm there." Because at that time I was moving over into jazz, and there weren't really any jazz drummers in those years way up in the mountains where I ended up living in Colorado. So I moved to San Francisco, and but I played a great big F-hole jazz guitar there for about 10 years, but it was bigger than I was. That was fairly miserable. My arm would go really numb playing that. That was pretty miserable.
How did you make the switch over?
It had that woody sound,
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
That was a Guild Artist Award, big one.
So how did you make the switch over from jazz to blues? I mean, it's not that big of a left turn.
Well, but that's a very interesting question. I never realized what I was into. I just played.
Right.
And in the jazz repertoire that I did in those days, about half my stuff was blues, but I never knew it. I never really knew it, And so one day I was telling this friend of mine who was a jazz singer that I was really into this one song. It was probably Never Make Your Move Too Soon, which Styx Hooper wrote, from the Jazz Crusaders. And it later, like, kind of became like a blues standard of all things. But, you know, and it's not a traditional, you know, well, it, you know, it's a long one form of the blues. It's a real long one. And anyway, I always played that song. I love that song. I play it to this day. And anyway, this jazz singer said to me, she goes, well, you always did play blues. You know, that you're always strongest with your blues. And that was the first time I realized I really was a blues player. I mean, I had not really thought about it, and I hadn't really played in any so-called blues clubs. But around that time, I started going down to this blues club in L.A., and I was married at the time, and I would go down there every Monday night and just hang out and play, and the band leader of that place would let me sit in the back of the band and just play all night, and they just played blues, you know. And I mean, I couldn't get enough of playing with that band. And then I thought later, I thought, you know what? I think I'm a blues player, you know. But I never would have thought of it, because I just was playing what I like to play. So anyway, that's how it all, you know, the label of me as a blues artist came pretty late.
Well, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. That's pretty interesting. But you kind of moved through the ranks pretty quickly.
Well, that was the weird thing. I put together a band. I took a lot of years off, so I basically sabotaged my career, you know. And I had a lovely child and, you know, kind of stayed home and was doing that. And then when she got to be a little older, I started playing, and I put together this band, and we did a recording. And it was basically people that were, you know, that could play anything, but we were playing a blues repertoire, basically blues. And we did a live recording, and that little live recording sort of took on a life of its own.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time. And then somebody nominated me for like Blues Artist of the Year for the LA Music Awards.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got that title. I won, so to speak. And then after that, then I just started, you know, people started to see me as a blues artist. That's how that happened. And then, you know, later I recorded with Taj Mahal, and that sort of, that also kind of, you know, there were different things that happened along the way.
Well, yeah, I mean, that something like something like that kind of cements it, doesn't it?
Well, I guess it does. But, you know, I thought I was going to get a lot of radio play when that happened, but then I never did. But that's just how things have gone for me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but like I said, I think by taking a bunch of years out, you know, when my career might have busted open,
mm-hmm.
I take full responsibility. But, you know, I have a lovely daughter, and now I have a lot kind of going on in Europe, so what the heck?
Yeah, you do. Tell me about what's going on there. It's so interesting when I speak to artists who are, particularly blues artists, who are playing a little bit here. They're kind of the in the underground or the, you know, and but in Europe they're playing sold out clubs and.
Well, what's going on there? Well, eventually I did divorce my daughter's father. And so when the divorce happened, that was almost 10 years ago, and I had been communicating with this woman over in Europe, and she had said she might promote me in Europe, and I said, well, so when the divorce happened, I called her, and I said, would it help if I come over there? And she says, oh, yes, come over, and you can stay at my house, and I'll introduce you to everyone. So I went over there, you know. I'm like, okay, I'm on the plane. So I get over there, and indeed, she introduced me to a lot of players. And but it's taken a really long time. And for many years, I held out, and I wanted to go over there with my band from here. You know, but because I wasn't well-known over there, none of the promoters would ever take me over there with my band, you know, because it's too much money. But I stubbornly held on to that for years and years. So about a year ago, a friend of mine who's over there, who's probably one of Denmark's best-known guitarists, named Aske Jacobi, and he just did a record here that's released this week on Sony Records, released yesterday. Aske Jacobi, he did a record here in L.A. with Jim Keltner, the drummer. And anyway, Aske's last year invited me over there and said, you can come over and play in this blues club called Mojo, which is in Copenhagen, and I'll put the band together and don't worry about a thing, just come. And it was such a revelation because, you know, I realized that I could just go over there and play, and I could play with Danish players. So I no longer needed, you know, to try to get four or five people over into a foreign country, you know, airfares and hotels and all that.
Sure.
It just, and I don't know why that was such a revelation, but yeah, I've gone over there, and then I would just stay, and I would just take gigs with various bands. And so this other band over there kind of adopted me, the Almost Blues Band .dk is their website, and they kind of got into me, and they just thought and in fact it happened a lot because of my guitar playing. They like that I play a certain groove, you know, that I'm just like really focused on, you know, kind of a funky thing that I do, the funky groove. And so they're like, they booked a bunch of gigs for me, basically. And then from there, I got an agent over there who books me now. But, you know, all those things just took a really long time. But a lot of guitar players here have asked me about it, you know, and I'm still, you know, kind of trying to infiltrate over there, you know. It just takes a lot of time and stuff. And honestly, I really just want to play. And I don't want to have to spend half a day on Facebook and, you know what I mean, all the other stuff that goes into, you know, the gigs.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or spending time, you know, getting a poster made or, you know, all that stuff that one has to do. Yeah. But by locking into these other bands that are excited about me, they're taking care of a lot of that stuff.
Sure.
Yeah, and maybe the poster doesn't look just like I would have had it look, but it's cool, and I'm, you know, I'm letting go of the control of those things, and I'm just focusing on my playing.
Yeah, that's great.
And I play Asher guitars. I don't know how familiar you are with
Ashers. Actually, I just saw Mark Ford play last night, and he was playing one.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've known Billy a long, long time. Billy used to have a shop next to my daughter's preschool or grammar school. And so I would drop my daughter off and I'd walk next door, errant mother that I was, and there was the guitar shop. And I'd stay over there for a while. And then I'd go back and pick her up, you know, because in those years, you know, they'd get out, at, you know, you'd only have a few hours free, you know.
Right.
And, anyway, I started playing Billy's guitars, but I still had this vintage Strat, which I was really into. But then I started playing Billy's guitars, and at long last, I found Billy makes this Telecaster that's an Asher guitar. And, you know, that I can't say enough, you know, how much I love those guitars. So, you know, the Strat took a back seat, and now I play, you know, pretty much exclusively Asher, Billy Asher's Tellies, you know.
Well, that's pretty cool. Well, you've got such a, you know, it's interesting, you know, and I've said this a dozen times, Billy Gibbons calls tone meat on wire on wood. And and I noticed, like, I was watching some video of you earlier today, and I was like, wow, you know, the majority of her tone is coming from her hands.
Yeah, I play with my hands. Yeah. I don't use a pick.
Right.
I've tried using a pick.
Mm-hmm.
And I play with my nails. You know who I learned that from was Amos Garrett.
Oh.
Who was, you know, the guy that did Maria Muldaur's solo,
yeah,
Night at the Oasis.
Yeah.
Anyway, Amos Garrett came down and did a record with me once. He lives in Canada. And he came down and he said, you know, I'm using these, he was using at the time acrylics. And he goes, now you have to learn to do this yourself, because when you're on the road, you got to prepare it. You got to know how to do this. You know. So here's Amos Garrett, this kind of rough and tumble man, you know, with his little manicure kit. I'm like, what? What's this? You know, are you kidding me? You know. And he's like, all the guys use this. You know. Anyway, I used the acrylics for a number of years, and then recently I switched over to using these gel nail. You know, it's just basically they paint on this gel, and it makes the nail very hard. Actually, not as hard as the acrylic. The acrylic nails are, like, really hard and sort of somewhat brittle. The gels have a little bit, you know, nicer sound. So I'm playing with my hands, basically, which can be kind of brutal, because there are nights when my hands kind of take a beating. I get a little excited. So, but it allows me to play and to pick out strings that, well, I guess you could do that too with a pick, but I don't know. I just always played in the right hand with my hands.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just going to go with that. That's what I do.
Well, it's interesting. I've noticed that over the last 10 or 15 years or so, Jimmy Vaughn's been playing no pick. And when I go to see him play, it's interesting because the tone is totally different.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you do have to turn up a tiny bit to get over it. It's, you know, it's not as, you know, I think a pick, it just is a different sound.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for those of us that, you know, are kind of guitar geeks, or mm-hmm. geekette. Mm-hmm. I'm a guitar geekette, I guess.
A geekette.
And then cool. I also play slide, but I only play a little bit of slide, mm-hmm. I have to admit. But I like to throw in a couple songs on slide. I think the slide, well, first of all, I love open tunings. And if I had to play all night by myself, I'd probably sit down and just play ballads all night in open tunings.
Mm. What's your favorite?
You know,
what's your favorite open tuning?
G. I play now in G,
mm-hmm.
mostly.
Yeah.
I used to play in E a lot, mm-hmm. but now I play in G, and I've got an Asher Rambler. It's a Rambler hubcap, and so I'm playing with you know, one of those now.
Oh,
I really
cool.
like it a lot.
Oh, that's cool.
I had a crummy dobro for many years, an electric dobro, but crummy nonetheless, made in China, and it had a good kind of shitty sound that
mm-hmm.
kind of sounded really good, because it sounded kind of, you know, screwed up, but it was screwed up, and if you ever fretted anything on that guitar, it was out of tune. So eventually I had to bite the bullet and go buy a real, you know, a real guitar, so mm-hmm. that I could slide and fret the guitar, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought one of Billy's Ramblers. So I'm real happy with that. But I've left those guitars and a Fender Super Reverb, a vintage one that I bought over there. I left all that stuff over in Europe because, you know, the last couple of years I've been flying everything back and forth, and it's been kind of rough.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah. Actually, I wanted to ask you a little bit more about Europe. How is the what's the scene like there as opposed to here? What's the differences?
Oh, well, it is very different. But I don't know if it's just my experience. You know, obviously, it's just my experience. But my experience there, the audiences I feel over there are generally different for clubs. People go out to clubs there, and they go out to have a nice time, but they go out for the entire evening, and they just want to sit down. And, of course, I think people drink a lot more over there because they're not driving cars so much,
mm-hmm.
and the culture drinks a lot. So the clubs are making money. The clubs are making money, and the clubs pay the musicians money.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most of us know here in the States, you can't hardly make any money playing in a club. But but over there, the clubs actually pay the musicians. They always usually feed the musicians. And that's a big part of it, too. You go there, and they'd be like, oh, we've got your food ready, you know. It's like, what? But the audiences, from the audience's side of it, people just love musicians. They're artists that are, like, revered, from what I can see. Now, I suppose there is an element of that here in the States, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I just never found it here. Which makes me really kind of sad, to tell you the truth, you know, that,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I've had flurries of fans here in the United States, but over there, I can feel it. I can just feel it. I can feel the love.
Mm-hmm.
And, in February, I went over there to do some live recording with, and I took my longtime keyboard player from the States, Ken Stange. And Kenny had played with Joe Cocker. So a lot of people were excited to meet Kenny. And Kenny also plays a little harp, and I thought that would be really, really great. And Kenny and I are great friends and played together forever. So Kenny went over, and we had this, so we had the Danish band, and then we had Kenny. But there were people, we played three nights in a row at this one club, Café Bartoff in Copenhagen. And there were, like, people that came all three nights in a row, and they would come, like, an hour early to get a seat. And they'd stay all night till 2 in the morning, and then they had to drive. Some of them were going home, and it was, like, an hour and a half away. Hmm. And they come all three nights. I was just like, that's just crazy. So, I don't know. I think that's just because I fell into this little pocket of people over there.
Well, I mean, I spoke to Taranzo Cannon. Are you familiar with Taranzo?
I don't know him.
Taranzo's he's from Chicago. And,
oh yeah.
And he plays. He's a blues guy, and he plays in Europe a lot. And,
yeah.
And he says basically the same thing that you say. The folks have a lot more reverence for the musician. They're out to have a good time. They're there for the music. They just have this genuine
love
for it. Yeah.
Well, the other thing is, they just love the music, and they don't. I'll give you an example. If I played Sweet Home Chicago,
mm-hmm.
here in the States, I would be getting some looks like, oh, that old chestnut, are you kidding me? Are you playing that? Really? And over there, I mean, literally, this woman told me, now I thought this was pretty funny, but I love her to death. she told me, her name's Nita Christensen, she told me that she literally cried when I played Sweet Home Chicago.
Hmm.
Now, I don't understand why she cried. Maybe I was butchering it. I don't know. I don't know why she cried, but I thought, you know, that just shows you the difference. I mean, over here, people would be going, play something new, play something modern, play mm-hmm. something, you know?
Yeah.
But over there, if I play, you know, if I want to play, you know, Kansas City in E just because I want to play the guitar for a minute and just goof around on the guitar, everybody's like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's freedom for me. That gives me freedom.
Yeah. I think there's a romanticism for outside the US. I think there's a romanticism about that music, those songs, those places that those songs are about. Whereas
yeah.
I find more and more, I mean, when I'm out and about, last night I was actually, when I saw Mark Ford play last night, yeah, there was some, mm-hmm. And you know, you can always tell who, you know, in America anyway, you can always tell who the musicians are because they're the ones who don't applaud at the end of a song. It's like, really? Really, you turd? The guy just played an amazing song. It was a great song. He sang
yeah.
great. He played great. Great solo.
Yeah.
And you, why? Why? Because you're a turd.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know.
Well, yeah, it's been really great. And then, like I said, the clubs are making money. And
yeah. So
and,
the balance is still there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything's working.
Yeah.
And, you know, like here, I can't blame the club owners for not paying the musicians much because, number one, the musicians are willing to play for nothing here. And number two, at least in L.A., that goes on all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then number two, the club isn't really making any money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, but like, give you an example. I got to tell you this story. When I went over there, the first gig I ever played in Denmark,
mm-hmm.
I walked in with my guitar and they hand me the little drink tickets and they go, these are for you. So I put them in my hand and it's these little pieces of paper, you know, redeemable for one drink, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there are 10 of them. And I looked at them and I said, oh, so these are for the band. And they're like, no, those are for you. And then I'm going, you mean they're for the band? He goes, no, those are yours. And I go, well,
I'm not drinking that much.
And I'm going, and they go, well, if you order a really good scotch, that costs 2 drink tickets. I'm like, really?
Are God
you guys
bless
crazy? Him. So that was my introduction to the Danish Blues Club, you know.
God bless them.
That cracked me up. That really cracked me up. You know, but that club, and this is up, that club is open till 4 or 5 in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And so after the main band plays, in fact, I might do this next summer, on nights where I'm not playing out with the band, they have just solo people go in there and play from like 2 to 5.
Wow.
Gotta love it, man. You know?
That's fantastic.
It is really great. And people go there. People know that it's open late. That's the Club Mojo.
Yeah.
And people know it's open late. So they go in there after they've been to other places and just hang out. There's a lot of hanging out over there. Hang it out. And people just hang out, you know?
That's cool.
And it's very social. Very,
yeah.
very social.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that I really love. And just hanging out, and you know, so yeah. So after the main band plays, they have other people go in there and plug in and play. It's, I mean, they're on the bill, you know, they're
mm-hmm.
officially, you know, employed by the club.
Right.
But I'm just saying, I don't know anywhere like that in LA.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That is really cool.
So yeah. So, it's a long commute.
Yeah, you'd think.
It's a long commute, I'm telling you. But that's why I started leaving guitars over there. I just can't. Because what I found out is when you ship your guitars in those groovy, you know, cases, mm-hmm. they go into the overlong baggage, the oversized baggage. And then you've got to, like, scoot over to the oversized baggage department,
mm-hmm.
you know, after you're, you know, 12 or 14 hours in an airplane, and find the oversized baggage claim.
Mm.
And it's just, you know, it's just too much already.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and then because you don't have porters anymore, I mean, not to date myself, but hey, you know, once you're, while you're still inside the airplane, the airport, you can't get anybody to help you, and I travel alone.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, now you've got your baggage, and now you've got your oversized baggage. And I mean, if you saw me going through the airport, it's like laughable. It's like a cartoon of misery, you know. So I just decided it's just not worth it. I'm just leaving guitars.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Everywhere I go.
No, that's smart.
I mean, it's a luxury, but I you know, it's kind of not a luxury because dragging them around is too much.
Yeah, and you're saving a lot of money too, for as far as the travel is concerned.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, so that's my story.
So, what about what? How did you end up hooking up with Keb Mo?
Well, let's see. I had a manager at one time in my life, and he knew him because he worked on some of his projects. And I wrote a song that I felt needed a little something. And I had listened a lot to his songs. I really loved his songwriting, and I wanted to meet him. And so he called him up, and he lived in L.A. at the time. And he sent him the song. And then he said, oh, yeah, tell her to come over. So I went over to his house, and he had a little studio in the back, and we went out there and finished this song that I had started. But the funny thing was, when I got there, it was during a time when I was splitting up with my husband,
mm-hmm.
and I think I was crying. I was kind of a basket case, you know. So we went out from the studio into his garden, and I was out there sobbing. I mean, you know, the guy's got a heart of gold, I'll say that. So he goes, well, what we need to do is just write this song, you know, about this situation. And I'm like, okay, you know. So we did. But, yeah, that's how I met him. And then shortly after that, he moved away. And then I called him one time, and I told him, you know, our little song, I played it in a coffee shop with one of my favorite drummers of all time, James Gadson. And I played it with James Gadson and a bunch of the regular guys here in town, and he got a bunch of hits on YouTube. Like, it's got like a quarter of a million hits on YouTube. So I called Kevin Moore once and told him that our little song had a little life of its own.
That's cool.
But he moved back east, and I know he tours like crazy.
Oh, like crazy, yeah. I've been trying to get him on the show, and I've been talking back and forth with his folks trying to get him happening. So there's a live record coming, huh?
There is a live record with my guys in Denmark. And I decided to do that because we want a tour in Europe. And mm-hmm. We're doing a small tour this summer, but I'm hoping next summer to expand into some other countries over there.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand Germany is, like, super hot. And also, I want to go up to Norway.
Mm-hmm.
And I may or may not do that this summer, but, you know, so we're sort of building our platform over there, you know.
That's cool.
We're building out.
Yeah, that's great.
And I felt that I need to demonstrate that I'm well placed with a Danish band, and that no one needs to worry about paying for those airfares, you know, from from the U.S. for my band
and the oversized baggage.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I mean, the funny thing is, I could go and play solo. I mean, truth be told, but I've never really loved playing solo. I mean, that's how I made a living when I was really young. Because, you know, you could get pretty good money playing solo, and you can make a living. But I never found it very inspiring or fun. And right now, it's all about fun, you know. I've got to have fun. If it's not fun, then I'm not really into it. So it's really fun playing with new bands and new people. And, you know, on any given set of gigs, there's always a gig or two where somebody can't do the gig, you know.
Right.
You know, they've got to go to their sister's wedding or something. Something getting in the way of my gig. Can you imagine, you know? So there's always, but see, now I look at it differently. I embrace the change now. I embrace the opportunity to play with new people and have fun with all the new people. And there are a ton of great players over there. But occasionally I'll be walking down the street over there and I'll see a poster of people that I know, like Kirk Fletcher, who plays here out of L.A., who's, I think, one of the great guitar players. I love Kirk Fletcher's playing. And, yeah, I was up in some northern remote town in Denmark, and I saw this huge poster of Kirk Fletcher, and I thought it was super fun, you know.
That's great. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how this all pans out, because I really think, I mean, my gut is telling me that this is really going to really fly as far as, because like you said, you know, in Denmark, they're not alone in their love for this type of music, and because they have a genuine interest in it all. I know Germany is. I know the Eastern Bloc countries are, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, they just love it. And I mean, we broadcast there as well, all over Europe. And, you know, it's amazing the people that I hear from often about how much they enjoy what we do and what we're giving them. And I think it's just wonderful. And I think it's great that you're doing that.
Yeah. And the irony is I'm finally starting to play better than I've ever played. So, you know, it's sort of paying off. I play here in L.A. a lot with Jamie James, of Jamie James and the King Bees. And Jamie and I, you know, have a band here in L.A., but I play all the time with Jamie. And, you know, Jamie, you know, a guitar god if there ever was one. And a great singer as well, and a great songwriter. So we've got some tunes I need to get recorded. You know, I need to settle down and do that. But I don't think that can happen before, you know, this summer, because I'm going back over there in about 6 weeks.
Okay, cool.
As the song goes, I'm booked, I got to go. So, you know, I'm going back, and that's all there is to it.
So we figure by...
My daughter grew up, by the way. I'm not a negligent parent.
No,
I'm
saying...
My daughter grew up and is graduating from college.
Wow.
So...
So we're looking at, what, beginning of June probably for this record?
I'm hoping, yes. Because I have a gig at a little festival over there on June the 4th. And I hope we have some product.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time out to talk to me today. I appreciate it.
Well, I thank you, too. I mean, I'm thrilled to be a part of a guitar show because, you know, Half Guitar Will Travel.
Yeah.
There are a lot of women out there that love their guitars.
Thank goodness. Thank goodness. I'm tired of the boys' club, to be honest with you.
You know, and uh, I, I don't play like a lot of the guys. I've always had a guitar slinger at my side. You know, mm-hmm. I played a lot with Joey Delgado here in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
I do love the instrument, and I think there are, you know, there are those women out there that have been guitar slingers. You know, there are a few of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I still marvel at Sister Rosetta Tharpe.
Yes.
I marvel at her playing. I mean, man, oh man,
yeah.
Just so good.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Hey, I wish you so much. Have you decided on a title for the record?
Well, from what I understand, it's going to be Live from Cafe Bartop.
Okay.
It's going to be something like that, because uh-huh. we recorded it live at Cafe Bartop.
Okay.
Well,
I will find out the exact information when it comes out, and I'll let everybody know.
Yeah, we'll get it to you, and you can get it up.
That's great.
Appreciate all your help on the, you know, for all the guitar players out there.
Oh, my pleasure. I love it. I'm such a geek. I love the guitar, and I love guitar players, and I learn something new from every single one of them, so.
Wow. Well, if you're ever over in L.A., come, you know, hit me up, and I'll take you over to Billy Asher's demo room.
Wonderful. I'm expecting to be out there. I'm supposed to be out there next January, so yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah, for the NAMM show?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Billy will be at NAMM. He sold almost all his guitars at NAMM last year.
All right. Yeah, man. I could get lost in there, man.
Yeah, I'll get lost in there. All right. Great talking to you, Mark.
All right. Thanks so much. You take care.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Well, there you have it, folks. Two great blues guitarists. Once again, people that you should know. And if you listened, now you do. Hope you enjoyed that. I sure did. I love talking to those folks. Super talented. And it's always great to hang with people like that. I love it. Folks, don't forget Tips, Tricks, and Licks with Mr. Scott Gaylor. You can find him at scottgaylor.com and, of course, guitarradioshow.com. And our YouTube channel as well. Don't forget, tomorrow morning we got Adam's 500 words on micro fret guitars. This is a good one. I enjoyed this a lot. It was really good. And don't forget our Nico's pickups giveaway we're doing. You want to win? Go to guitarradioshow.com. Go to the contact GRS tab. Put your information in there, and then in the comment box, put pickups, please, and you'll be automatically entered to win. We are going to be ending that. Just at the end of this month, so it's coming up. Okay, we got a lot of other cool stuff coming up in the very near future. We got the Adam Lopez giveaway along with his new record, which is fantastic. And there'll be more to talk about that in the very near future. In the meantime, we got to get out of here. But folks, take care of each other. Take care of yourselves. Keep on playing, and please buy it. Don't steal it. And we'll see you on the next episode of Guitar Radio Show. Peace.
I like this crowd already.
GRS Productions.
New episodes of Guitar Radio Show air every Wednesday on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Podbay, Player FM, Podomatic, and of course...